the Water Supply Project Governance Committee. And Arlene, if you could let the minutes reflect that Rob McLean is representing Cal Am, I'm representing the Water Authority, Jeannie Byrne is representing the Water Management District, and Supervisor Dave Potter is representing the Board of Supervisors. And with that, can you lead us in the pledge of allegiance?
Please join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now turn to public comments. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the Governance Committee on any item not on today's agenda. Seeing none, I will close the public comment and bring it back. And the first item is to receive a report from California American Water on the borehole investigation, test well schedule, and the overall project schedule. And I'll turn it to either Rob or Ian.
Go ahead, Ian.
Is there a slide before this one? Hey, hello. Thanks for having us here to present. I'm here to address item number one at first. My content will be a little update on the boreholes, and then I'll speak a little bit about the test well at CEMEX, and then the overall schedule. So if you could, next slide.
There you go. Is that, see the little blue light there?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. So the borehole history, we have completed 11 boreholes along the peninsula. We currently have one under construction. That's the last one at CEMEX, borehole number 6 that we've done. And then this last one is between the CEMEX property and Highway 1. And then we currently have one borehole remaining, and that will be up at the State Parks parking lot on Monterey Dunes Way. So at the end of this, we'll have completed 13 boreholes in 7 months. The current borehole will be done next week. We'll move to the Monterey Dunes Way and be complete in another 2 weeks. So we'll be all done in April on boreholes. Next slide. And I just wanted to briefly give you some photos so you kind of see what the boreholes look like. This was the first borehole we did at CEMEX out right at the beach. And the reason I included this was, you'll see later in my presentation, just a little bit around, a little bit past here is where we're proposing to put the test well. So that's just to give you some reference of where things would be. This was the borehole at Potrero Road. You can see it's a big dirt parking lot, and we were in the back corner. Next slide. And this was a borehole up in Moss Landing. This was at Del Mar Fisheries parking lot, and you can see, the reason I include this, you can see we had very tight constraints in an area, and the guys could still pull it off. And this was right there. I'm standing on top of the water on the dock. So they're right next to the water as well. So the results of the boreholes preliminarily look like CEMEX. We had good results in the boreholes. Sand out at CEMEX. But throughout all the boreholes at CEMEX, we have yet to find any significant clay layer. So there's lots of sand and silty sands for good production. The water quality results that we recently acquired were in TDS ranging from 24 to 35 throughout the zones. And our hydrogeologists are indicating that right now it doesn't look like the CEMEX, underlying CEMEX, falls within 180 to 400 foot aquifer subbasins. As typically defined, it seems the CEMEX area is outside of that. I'll kind of show you that a little bit later. Potrero Road as well had very favorable results, and you'll see that later as well. A lot of sand up top, and we did find a aqua tar at about 140 foot it started. It was about 30 feet thick. So we had a defined aquifer, which was good. because we could stay a slant well above that and get ocean water. And then Moss Landing was unfavorable. It had lots of clay throughout the depth and intermixed with small sand and silt layers. It was pretty pretty messy up there. So next slide, please. So I'll touch quickly on the test slant well at CEMEX. This is a picture of what the dual rotary rig would look like at CEMEX drilling. This was down in Southern California. So that's ours will look just like that. That's the rig that drills, and then inside we put in our screening and our pump later. Next slide. Okay, so this is CEMEX site, and this is where the test slant well would go, right in this area. So the picture you saw earlier, that truck stopped about here, and our setup would be back in here. This is the access road that you drive in from through the plant. We conducted a borehole out here, a borehole about here, then another one back in here. So what I wanted to show you here was the original location of the test well and the application was in this area around here. What we have found through the coastal erosion study and storm event study is a mitigation has to be done in order to keep the test well behind this red line, which was a 2010 erosion line part of the study. But we also wanted to keep it back here behind this 2060 long-term erosion and the 2040 storm erosion. So as a mitigation to our application, we're going to propose to move the test well beyond that line back in here. So this is what the test well would look like. We would set up in here and then drill it out here about 800 to 900 feet horizontally, get us out underneath the ocean. This is the existing outfall, PCA outfall. And then as part of that also, we would have the well ocean water. So we just take ocean water in, pump it back out our line and into PCA's outfall at the manhole and go back out to the ocean. And this also, just for purposes, there's an existing PCA. They have a temporary construction easement out in this area. So we'd kind of all be in this disturbed area anyway.
Looks like that black line is the 2060 long-term erosion of dune toe from the recently released ESA study, released earlier, last week, I suppose.
That's correct.
But they also have the 2060 storm erosion hazard zone, which looks to be a, I don't know, 100, let's see, about 100 feet inland from there.
To the east?
Yeah.
That was 2060
storm erosion hazard zone.
Right. Yeah, talking with the consultants and all, we didn't feel we had to go that far inland. It was a compromise between we're projecting some of these wells may have a 20-year, 30-year life. But we were compromising getting ocean water versus moving it too far inland. We wanted to do enough to mitigate the erosion to get the permitting approval through and get this test well in, while also preserving any opportunities that would come for making a production well and optimizing the ocean water take. Next slide, thank you. This is just to give you a conceptual idea of what the test well would look like. I'm sure most of you have seen this before. We just have a test well coming down at 20 degrees about, and then we'd have a line that would go out to the outfall. Next slide, please. So this is where I wanted to a little bit show you what these were, the actual results of the borehole program. So this is a CEMEX site. We have borehole 1, 2, 3, and this is somewhat of preliminary findings of the geologic conditions out there. Some intermittent, small, little clay layers. And this would be what the test well would look like. Now this is misrepresented optically because the scales are different. So this is much more stretched out horizontally in reality. This is compressed vertically and horizontally. So the previous slide shows a little more realistically. But this is just to show you that most of what we found under CEMEX was just all sandy, silty sandy material with no large defined aquitard layer. And so what I want to add too that is not on here is we recently just completed the sixth borehole, which is further back here on CEMEX. And the results just came in today on the geology of that. And they were thinking that they would find out here maybe evidence of a 180 aquitard in here. They found none. In fact, for some odd reason, they don't know yet, but this borehole actually produced complete sand. There was absolutely nothing they found in the borehole for 250, 300 feet. So that's what CEMEX looks like now. I'm not sure if anybody has any questions on that. But before we go on,
any questions for Ian? Ian, I do have one. Earlier you said that the TDS was 24,000 to 35,000. 35,000 being saltwater, right?
Right. That's correct.
So what? Why is it not closer to 35 throughout? And should we be concerned about it being 24? Doesn't that sounds like some freshwater, some significant freshwater?
Yes. The thought is that there's really not much movement in underneath the CEMEX, but once that test well is activated, the porosity of the sands that were found, the hydrogeologists say it's going to produce when they do all the flow arrows, it's all going to produce flow quickly into ocean water. So it's sort of stagnant water somewhat right now.
So is that, I think the estimate, her preliminary estimates were 97 to 99% salt water.
Right.
Is that consistent with those estimates, or are we modifying those estimates?
Well, the results that we found in the boreholes aren't indicative of what will happen when the site well is running. It gives us an idea that it is influenced by ocean water quite a bit. So the evidence is a slant well, and that's why we got to conduct it. But the boreholes, it's sort of the water's somewhat stagnant and stale. From you got rain, and you do have influence from any leakage. And
any other questions for you?
And I'll briefly go into the schedule. So first, we'll jump into the test well schedule. This is a somewhat boiled down version of Andrew Homer's attorney schedule, which is much more complex, but this is the CEQA NEPA permit, how it looks today. We are in this area here. We fully expect the report to come out of Marina's consultant by the mid-April. The city will conduct an internal review, and then by the end of the month, it will be published to the street for a 30-day public review comment period. At that point, we'll also have, as a concurrent parallel process, we have a whole federal NEPA process that goes on down here. They've been very cooperative, and this is moving along well. So after we get through Marina, we get through the 30-day public review period, Marina will make modifications to the report based on public comment, and they will finalize that report and then get it to the first Planning Commission meeting for Marina, scheduled for July 10th. And what we have programmed is two meetings per Planning Commission and City Council to get through the process. So they will maybe possibly review it. The first Planning Commission maybe take action, but we programmed it. They'll take two meetings to take action. Regardless of the outcome at the second PC meeting, we anticipate an appeal one way or the other. If we get a yes or no out of the PC, they'll go to the Planning City Council for their 8-7 August 7th meeting. And then again, we program that they may kick it as to another meeting as well. So we get to a Marina, we get to an 8-20 August 20 as our long light, get a yes or no. And at that point, again, either way, it'll either continue through the process as is with a yes approval by City Council, or if it's appealed, it will go through a sort of an appeal process with the Coastal Commission, but we anticipate that both will come together for a Coastal Commission meeting in October for approval by the Coastal Commission. And with that, we've programmed the NEPA process to land at the same time, and we don't expect any issues here with NEPA. So all in all, we'll get through Coastal Commission in October. We'll do some post-approval requirements, and then we'll be constructing a test well by the beginning of November.
What about marine sanctuary and brine disposal? That's all done by the Coastal Commission?
Good question. The test well won't have brine. The test well will be just...
No, but I mean, like, looking at impacts.
Michael, we are recording the meeting, and so we want to make sure that we capture your question. Let me first see if members of the Governance Committee have questions, and then I'll ask you to come forward so that we can capture your question. Members of the Governance Committee on the schedule. The location of the Coastal Commission, have we received clarification as to whether the Coastal Commission wants it to be on the Central Coast?
That's something we're still looking at. Our early indications are now no, but it's something we're continuing to have a dialogue with them about.
And I guess fall on to that, if there may be things that they would want us to do locally to make them more accepting of not having it in the Central Coast, making sure that we have at least four public meetings on this. Right, Dave, do you have...
So is it intended that the test well then become the production well?
If the results are favorable, yeah, that would be the best economic decision, and yeah, that would certainly...
It's usually the case.
Yep. And so we have it programmed in the application that if it came production, it's covered under the full EIR.
So is there any part of this that is questionable in terms of timing? I mean, do you see any piece of this that might not happen on that schedule?
I don't at the moment. I think we have enough float with some of these, with the two meetings with the city. And we have, everybody's been cooperative. So
is there a certified local coastal plan for this area?
There is a Marina LCP.
LCP.
Yeah.
So then the appeal would be under consistency determination?
Don't know. Andrew may help me with
that. I mean, it'll be what it is, but I think the appeal will have to see, there'll be a substantial issue determination to see if the appeal actually raises a substantial issue.
Okay.
That would eat up a 30-day process, and then there'd be, I mean, I think the schedule's a little compressed, but, you know, it'll be what it is. There's not much you can do about it, but I prefer to be optimistic.
Right.
Let me see if Michael, if you want to come forward and ask your question.
I was just wondering in terms of
and Michael. Well, I know we know each other, but if you can,
Michael, we're working with the Public Trust Alliance, and in looking at some of the environmental impacts of this brine disposal. Is a key impact, as well as, you know, water rights and stuff like that. And it would seem that it would have to be determined to be absolutely necessary in order to take on an impact like this. And it seems a very foreseeable impact that the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary might be very concerned about is brine disposal, because desal facilities in other areas have absolutely destroyed local resources. So I just was flagging that as a concern.
So maybe I'll comment, Michael. Ian was talking about the test well. Of course, there will be no desalination of the water from the test well. So we'll be putting back seawater into the ocean. So from that perspective, there's no brine issue. The subject of brine is, of course, being reviewed in the EIR, which we haven't seen yet, but based on all the work that's going on, I know it's being thoroughly studied. And I'm not aware of, I mean, there are several desalination plants around the world. I wouldn't categorize any of them as having destroyed the local environment, to my knowledge, from what I'm familiar with. Rest assured that this one, given the high profile of the sanctuary and that this is in the state of California, it is being studied very carefully.
The thing I would add is in the settlement agreement, we did commit to exploring several contingencies for brine discharge, and I believe that ESA is looking at those contingencies as part of the EIR. We also, in the budget, have an additional $10 million if one of the more expensive contingencies needs to be pursued. That is already within the numbers that we've been looking at. We didn't want to commit to that until we see the results of the EIR. Any other members of the public? Claire.
Larry Hampson with NPWND. Ian, you mentioned that you are pretty tight on room for the slant test well. If the CEMEX site works out all right, I believe you've got two clusters you're going to build of 4 and 5 slant wells. And I was just wondering about the footprint for that kind of facility.
Footprint is what we're looking at today is 10 slant wells are needed, 8 for production and 2 redundant wells. And so the test well that you saw are early indications right now based on the location is we could get 2, possibly 3 out of that location. So I'm counting on 2 out of that one. And then we'll need 2 other pods on the CEMEX property in the disturbed active mining area. And we've located 2 of those, and we're just in discussions with CEMEX about the feasibility of using those locations. So they won't be all be located at that road, access road in that one. So we got 2 other pods to the south that we're
at. Any other member of the public have any? David
Lifland, I'm just a private citizen. I had a couple questions for him, one of them being that he stated that a 20 or 30 year life on the wells, 20 years being typical, that or less for beach wells, and we're taking out a 30 year project bond on this. Also, will the geological data be posted on the site? And then on the Marina EIR, if I'm recalling correctly, they were calling for the test well to be sealed up as well, not used for production. So I just, somebody could go back and look at that.
Thank you, David. Why don't I take up those questions?
The second question first. It's in the marine application as that it will be closed up because it's a temporary test well. We don't know if it's going to produce any results, be good. If it does prove to be productive and valuable, as Dave said, we're going to convert it to a production well under the EIR program. So that's good. And I'm sorry, what was your question?
The hydrogeological data will be put up on your website at some point.
Yeah, the hydrogeological data will be put up. And then on the life of the wells, they vary, right? They could be 20 years, they could be 50 years. We also have to maintain them. So today we don't know much until we do a test slant well. We can evaluate the corrosive conditions. It's a material science and corrosion issue, but we just don't know yet. But, we certainly hope to get more life out of them as well.
Any other members of the public have any comments at this point? Ian, do you have an additional part of your presentation on the overall project schedule?
I do, that's next.
Okay, yeah, why don't we turn it to that. Thank you.
Oh, I've just blacked it out.
There's one more slide, yes, sir. Okay, so this is a high-level look at just a schedule and presentation type of format. We, again, you know, this is, we have a 600-line Microsoft project file with everything that's involved, but this is quite a condensed version. Top line here is what the timeline looks like for the Coastal Commission to get the EIR process. So we're at a Q3 draft release by the CPUC with a Q1-15 approval by those, and then Coastal Commission processing. And we have it programmed for November approval at Coastal Commission. We've received feedback that it may take 6 months for them to process it. This is a little more than 6 months, but this puts us in the Central Coast Coastal Commission meeting. So that's why I have it programmed for November. And then we have our deadline out here of 2017. On the test slant well, we are going through a permitting process now. We again, as earlier shown, we'd have approval in October, and then we'd start test well construction in November. And then, along with the test well, we have some other major items going on: the PCA outfall agreement, we have land, we have PG&E. Electric service, and then we have all the RFP and bids and contracts to actually build the test well. So that's where we're at, and then based on the snowy plover seasons subsequent to that, we would have every fall start drilling slant wells for the production of the desal plant. And then the desal plant, we're going to have a basis of design report in May, 30% design drawings in June. We're going to conduct a value engineering session in June, the end of June. Then we'll quickly move to 60% design based on that feedback of the value engineering. Produce that by September. And right now we're sitting tight here between 60 and 90 on spend and level of effort until we get through the Coastal Commission. And if this happened for some reason to get accelerated, we can accelerate this. So this is all predicated on above. And then right now we have a program that we will actually start plant construction in February of 16, and it will take about 2 years, a little more, to get to full scale. Start up at mid-18. We do have the option of potentially maybe in the fall doing some sort of partial startup, but right now we're looking at the full scale mid-18. And then through all that we have the pipeline work going on. This is under extensive design right now. We've already met with many of the cities on routing and locations, so this is underway. This pipeline also should include the terminal reservoirs included in that work as well. So we have terminal reservoirs going along General Jim Moore, so that's in this timeline too. And this, again, will start off in 16 with construction, and it'll take about 2 years to finish. So that's somewhat of a high-level look at what the schedule looks like today. Okay. Any questions I can answer?
Any questions for Ian?
Well, it's not a question, but I mean, it's not exactly an EIR approval or denial by the Coastal Commission, since the Coastal Review process is a CEQA equivalent. So you don't just take the EIR and give it to them and they say yes or no on the EIR. Mm-hmm. So when I say it's a protracted process, that's where, you know, different interpretations of the environmental impact will show up.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Or any Godspeed, yes. Or any other alternatives being thought of?
Actually, Michael, just 1 second. Let me see if there's any other questions on the overall project schedule. Ian, this project schedule has it coming online mid-2018. That was also roughly the date before we had the most recent modification from Judge Minkin. So can you explain how you're making up for some of that time?
So the approval on that schedule showed the Minkin's change here, right?
Right.
Here we pushed that schedule out to CDM, and they came back with what they could do, and through their process, they have some float in there that they were able to compress, so that it did save us some time. This is, I think there's still some potential float in the construction that we could save some time on. I think this is a good conservative look at mid-18 as an outcome. I'm not sure if I quite hit what you're looking for, but.
Yeah, it's just the observation that if this has startup before Minkin added six months to the schedule,
right,
we'd start up from mid-2018. You add 6 months to the EIR and the CPCN, why doesn't that push out the date at least some?
Right.
If there was slop, why didn't you already tighten up that slop?
Right. The approval by Minkin here extended the 90. The original startup construction was going to be, prior to this, was going to be a fall 15. It was December of 15 start. So they've slipped that 3 months instead of six, just through their own float and compression. And then their original start was going to be, I think the original start was going to be the fall of 17, if I recall. And then, so we did have some slip here on schedule, but what we're trying to do is not absorb the full 6 months. We've compressed it down to, I believe, about 3 months of loss from the original. Instead of March, I think we were originally pretty comfortable with a March 18, and now we're June versus a August, September.
So that June 2018, is that when water is actually delivered, or is that just getting everything up and running?
No, that will be actually going out the door in June.
Okay.
Okay, why don't I open it up, Tom, if you want to.
Quick question, the date GWR decision, can that be clarified before you take that off?
I'll just repeat the question. It was Tom Raleigh asking whether the date for the GWR decision could be.
It says 2014, but it's under 2015.
Oh.
And that affects the sizing, that's why I asked.
Yeah, well, if you could speak to when the. There's a number of dates for GWR. Our testimony is due this fall,
right,
but the decision doesn't occur until 2015.
Okay. Yeah, it's supposed to be 2015.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Good catch.
Larry?
Larry Hampson again with MPWMD. The test slant well construction and a presumed water quality data seems to be something that everybody's going to seek to answer, number one, how you design the desal plant, and number two, I think there are a lot of our friends in Salinas Valley that are going to want to know exactly what the water quality data is. It seems really aggressive to have a CPUC EIR and CPNC approval on a parallel track with getting test data. Could you talk about that?
Good question.
I'll try. I'm not sure. I might want to come up. I'm not 100% clear what you're asking, but let me try if I can.
I see them as serial tasks rather than in parallel, because you need the test data to answer the question of
what's the impact in the Salinas Valley from the extraction of salt water?
Mm-hmm. Let me try to, I might be able to answer it as well. It's my understanding that the CPUC's EIR team believes that they will have sufficient data from the boreholes and with the modeling that they are undertaking to complete the EIR with that data. The test well data would not therefore be necessary or included in the EIR. It would be used for CalAM's purposes to ensure before they invest millions, if not tens of millions of dollars in the full bank of the 10 production wells, and they would be used by the Salinas Valley. And so, although it may look like the results of the test slant well would be available before the final EIR, the plan would not be for those data to be included in the final EIR, that the EIR team did not judge that that is necessary for those purposes. Is that consistent with your understanding?
That's accurate. They'll use a test well with monitoring wells to verify the groundwater model and designs. Efforts.
Okay, Michael, did you have that?
Yeah. It's Michael Warburton with Public Trust Alliance. Does this schedule look at any alternative consideration whatsoever beyond this particular project?
No.
The finding of public convenience and necessity by the Public Utilities Commission has to be, I mean, you have to actually say reasonably that there is no other alternative. And has that process been completed at this point, saying that there's no other alternative?
Well, Michael, let me try to address that. I think, as you well know, there have been, over the last many years, numerous alternatives looked at. Back in 2011, I think it was, we did, CalAM did a thorough study of, I think, about 11 to 13 different alternatives, looking at their permittability as well as the cost of those different alternatives. And coming out of that effort, we settled on a desal plant with slant wells. Of course, then we filed an application at the commission, and then 15 or 16 different parties, 16 parties, of which I think you were not one of the settling parties, if I remember, settled on the path forward, which includes the desal plant, the aquifer storage and recovery, and the groundwater replenishment project under various conditions. So that is what the settling parties have as a proposal. That's currently pending before the commission, and it'll be the commission's decision as to whether that meets all the needs to issue a CPCN to CalAM. But at the present time, that's the assumption that we're operating under.
But if I could just ask, it seems to me there's two things going on. One is the EIR process, and then the other is the Coastal Commission permit. So the EIR, it has to have an alternatives analysis in which there will be a no-project alternative. So those other project options will be part of a CEQA process. The coastal permit's a completely different process.
Will reasonable sharing between agriculture and urban be considered?
Michael, I'm sorry. We're going to have to go through this in the regular way that we go through.
I was just asking if alternatives were being considered.
Yes, well, yeah.
Jim. Hi, I'm Jim Cullen, the Executive Director for the Water Authority. This is just from a staff perspective. I really appreciate the fact that CalAM is doing everything they possibly can to stay on the original schedule, in light of the recent decision of the administrative law judge. However, I would have to caution that what we essentially have up there now is a de facto optimistic and accelerated schedule, because in fact there's delays at the front end, and CalAM and their consultants are looking at ways to absorb that. But the reality is that's an acceleration of where we were before this decision. And I would just caution us to be about being overly optimistic of just absorbing these hits at the front end, where we're dealing with organizations outside of our own governance committee, our own community, would be impacted by decisions by administrative or judge. There'll be others. And I think we ought to, I would suggest to Cal Am that maybe we identify this full-scale plant startup as a quote-unquote optimistic or whatever you want to call it, accelerated, and identify on that schedule the impact that a six-month delay has, the administrative law judge's decision, what impact that would actually have if this original schedule stayed the same on the final date when we're going to be able to produce water. And I think that's what we should be looking at. If we can hit an optimistic schedule, great. If you've done a year ahead of that, that'd be wonderful. I'm sure the public would love it. But the public's certainly not going to be very happy if we miss that even beyond a month. Everyone's going to be criticized. And so I suggest that we realistically absorb on the schedule and show what impact it has every time we have some time of a permitting delay at the front end. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Tom.
Tom Rowley, represent Monterey Peninsula Taxpayers Association. I've expressed concerns that Jason's heard these before at the TAC, the Water Authority meetings. I don't believe Madam Byrne and Mr. Potter have heard it. I don't think you have either. I know your staff people have heard it. If I was on the PUC and I was asked to approve an EIR and issue a CPCN without the test slant well data being available and cranked into the EIR, I wouldn't approve it. I think you need a bulletproof EIR on this project. And as good as optimistically as the report we've had today and the schedule about the borehole and the tests, you know, it's mostly sand, I think that till you actually, which the final product, till you actually have a test slant well that you can show works, you are possibly creating a situation, leaving the EIR up to legal challenge. You're laying the groundwork for it. And I think the PUC, it's the same, unfortunately, it's the same consultants, ESA, that did the EIR for the regional desal that got overturned by the court. And I just hate to see us go down the same train tracks again and find out that we get done and the EIR is challengeable. So I think it is absolutely mandatory that the data from the test slant well be in the bag and in the EIR and show conclusively that you can do two clusters of 8 to 10 slant wells and that, yes, it really is going to work. I just cannot believe administrative law judge or the PUC commissioners, all five of them, are going to go down the same path that they did in December 2010 and wind up having, you know, all over their faces again. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom, for those comments. I'm not sure if there's, other than I'm happy you're not a PUC commissioner. You just said you wouldn't do. Anyone else wish to address the governance committee on this item?
David Glifland again. One of my concerns when I came before the Water Authority was why we weren't going open water intakes. Scott explained and did the research on the whole history of this. And I know that the slant wells are basically so that we'll have a lower TDS and a better quality water going in, or at least that was a theory at Dana Point. They found other problems, the magnesium, the irons, which we won't know until we do it. But the alternative is Rennie wells, and those are big, nasty, and would put a big dent in this schedule. The slant well is going to be 300 feet below the ocean floor. It's going to show a lower salinity than the beach wells currently are. I'm not sure how you're going to explain that to the Salinas farmers when they go, no, that's fresh water, that's not salt water. But my concern is the Rennie wells and why we're not pushing for the open water intakes. I mean, if deep water desal has proven a 99.998% survival factor on entrainment, why we can't push back at the PUC and say, hi, open water intakes are fine. We don't have to go through all the well drilling and just get the water flowing.
Thank you, David. rainy wells are one of the contingencies in the settlement agreement, and I believe the EIR will be looking at those. Can you confirm that?
Yes.
Okay. And open water intake, that's a whole big discussion that I don't think we have time to get into, other than to say we look carefully at that and decided that's not the path to go down at this point. Okay. Anyone else from the public wishing to address the governance committee on this item? Seeing none, I will close the public comment, bring it back. This is just receiving a report. No action necessary from the governance committee. We'll turn to item two, which is develop process for procurement of consultant to conduct value engineering analysis of CDM Smith DSAL project designs. And this is under category A2 of the governance committee agreement, which provides that the governance committee shall select a value engineer to facilitate and report on the proposed value engineering of the DSAL project, with consideration given to any recommended engineer submitted by any member of the governance committee. The CalAM shall conduct the procurement consistent with the process set forth elsewhere, including seeking recommendations from the governance committee. And then after reviewing the results of that procurement process, the governance committee shall decide, governance committee, not CalAM, shall decide which engineer is to be retained, paid for by CalAM, and that this matter should be ripe before CalAM accepts the 30% design, which I understand is coming up soon, 30% design from the contractors, in this case CDM Smith. I think that this is one of the key parts of the process, where we did negotiate for CalAM to give up the ability to perform the value engineering process. It is hopefully a part of a process where we will be able to identify additional savings or improvements to value. Doesn't necessarily have to be savings in capital expense, it could be savings in operating expenses. CalAM is not required to accept any or all of the recommendations from the value engineering process, but I believe that is a category B decision, which is to say they would be strongly encouraged to do so and would be asked to provide something in writing if they did not. Does my memory serve me? That is category B. Yeah, it's category B7. Why don't we start, Rob, could you or someone else with CalAM just provide an update of where CDM Smith is and when we will need to get to work on the value engineering.
Ian, you want to take that?
Yeah, let's bring your camera back up and see that on there.
Changed. So CDM, based on the results of the judge's decision, I had CDM relook at their schedule, and what I've reflected on this schedule is accurate today. That is, they'll finish their basis of design report in May, and then generate 30% designs beginning of June. And then we have already programmed with CDM June 23rd to 27th, that week, for value engineering week. So that's the schedule today. And we're prepared to move ahead with that. And we've solicited our internal team of experts for some recommendations on consultants that we could bring forward to you. I could compile those and get them to you for your consideration. And we also have a letter prepared to go out for the RFPs with the value engineering. That's ready to go out. So upon your concurrence, maybe I suppose at the next meeting, we could bring a full package together for your consideration and authorization.
Okay, so we will issue an RFQ or RFP, and then we'll need to come back together as this group to, in essence, award the bid. It won't technically be that, but it will be providing our binding recommendation to Cal Am. And then Cal Am will be in charge of contracting with that value engineering firm and basically lining up the details for the value engineering week of June 23rd to 27th. That'll be a public process where we and any member of the public can participate in that process.
That's right.
So we will need at least one more governance committee, at least as you're laying it out, we'll need one more governance committee between now and the time that you would issue a contract to a value engineering firm.
Yeah, I think it'd be good if we, I'd say probably we'd have to have another meeting this month, end of this month, at the very beginning of the week.
When would you like to have the VE firm under contract?
May.
So middle of May, maybe?
We have to the end of June for the meeting, but they need to prep. They need to review drawings ahead of time, review what's been produced. So yeah, I would say middle of May, end of May, we need to have them on board.
So the RFQ, RFP is out or not out?
No.
Or seems like an awfully short period of time to pick somebody of such importance to the project.
Yeah, we have a pretty good group of experts that have done this work.
So I hope you're not saying you already have somebody.
No, we don't. Actually, it's quite a list of people. But
this is not a long lead time procurement process. I mean, like procuring the desal plant takes months and months and months. People do value engineering all the time, and
the
RFP to award period doesn't have to be 6 months. To me, it's probably usually 6 months.
Just want to make sure it's not somebody you went to prep school with or something.
No, we haven't. It's your decision, and it's also your decision if you have firms that you would like included. So I think that's part of what we have to work out is how do we go from here to there.
Okay. Well, two questions. One, when you say you have 30% design, what are you talking about? Are you talking about the mechanics of it? Are you talking about the actual building designs as well? Everything. Like, so you have structural design 30% complete?
That's correct.
Okay, so buildings and machinery and?
Mechanical, electrical.
Everything. Okay. And I'm not a big fan of the term value engineering because it usually means we're going to find something that's of less value so we can save money, as opposed to something that is equal but less expensive. Mm-hmm. So I am not a fan of that term.
I've been instructed by someone to observe, as we've worked to get this in here, that it's not always even cheaper. Sometimes it may be more expensive on a capital basis because it's more efficient and so it'll save money over the life of the project. So rather than referring to it as finding less expensive, it's finding more value for our
Yeah, the intent is to get a better product in the end that is maybe better for maintenance, better for operations, maybe lower cost, maybe lower total cost of ownership. But oftentimes what happens with engineers, and I can say this because I'm an engineer, is they only think about the design and they don't think about 10 years down the road when somebody has to maintain an asset. How do you get access to it? How easy is it to remove that asset for replacement? And so the value engineering process brings together people from all kinds of different disciplines. It brings together the people that will actually operate the facilities. It'll bring together people from electrical backgrounds, maybe a civil engineer who will look at the structures, maybe an architect. And then it's really a thorough vetting of the design from different points of view, bringing in a diversity of view to try to get a better overall design. That's the intent of value engineering.
Right, but one would assume that the original design build firm, that was the criteria by which they were selected in the first place.
It is, but even as good as they are, they can always be criticized and they can always learn from other people's points of view. And so, in a project like this where you've got, there'll be a harsh marine environment, you know, the materials are going to be exposed to salt water. There's lots of things that expertise can come in and just double check the design parameters and make sure that just people have experience from all kinds of different, come to the table with different experiences, and they can really drive value into the process. The few that I've been involved with in my career have led to, and I think Jason's right, it's not always cheaper. Sometimes, you know, some people will go after, hey, here's a way to save money by changing out materials for lower cost materials, like in the building or something like that. But a lot of times they'll get into the maintenance, the maintainability, the durability of the assets. You know, oh, if we use, for example, if we use high efficiency motors, we can save over the long run on power costs, and that's, you know, there might be a trade-off to do things like that. So all of those kinds of things are usually up for grabs in value engineering.
And again, I just feel that that was the reason the design build firm was selected, that they would actually employ all of those opportunities
they
in the first place.
They do, but this concept of value engineering, I would say, is what is best in class for a plant of this type. That even, you know, in my career with American Water, we've done design build projects for cities. So I built the water plant for the city of Phoenix that American Water was the lead design builder on. And that project had a value engineering on it. And the city brought in experts from all over the world to look at the design that we put forward. And there's no designer that can't have their design improved upon. I mean, if you're at the point where your design can't be improved upon, I'd like to meet you. So that's the concept. And
I've always sort of looked at it as peer review and value engineering are rather synonymous.
Yes.
Peer review, though, can at times be a little bit more focused on, you know, efficiencies from a cost standpoint. So
I think the other aspect that this provides is an opportunity for the public. We know there's a lot of attention to this project. There will be people in our communities that have ideas, and the value engineer that we select will be charged with listening to those ideas, and the ones that are of merit, analyzing them and sending them on to Callahan and C.M. Smith. So it's better to get those ideas on the table now than after they've already completed 60 or 90% of the year. I know that Dave Stoll and Jim Colm have given some thought to this also. Dave, Lord Jim, do you want to offer some comments?
Yeah, do. I want to just clarify that the original CDM final contract had April 7th as the start time, which is why we're getting a little nervous. Ian's clarified that. But the value engineering process spins off the 30% design. About approximately a month it was allocated in the timeline. I think it's probably still about a month. So I think given the procurement subject to sections B1, B2, and C2 of the governance agreement, and that's going to need to come back to you as a committee, we should probably get a pretty solid schedule of the procurement process from CalM staff, and then schedule up another meeting, and let's get the RFP together, because we won't have that much time with review by this committee of that document. So, once that hits the street, Rob's right, it won't take as long as it would for the desal plant procurement. And there's plenty of firms, but they still need some time to respond and put their best foot forward, and then we have to make sure that CDM's really on the track for the 30% design, or the week of the 20th or 27th, or whatever those dates were, would have to slip. So, should probably get that to each of you and your agencies, and then your staff can review that, and we'll call and schedule the next meeting.
So, Dave, are you observing? Am I hearing that there actually may need to be two governance committee meetings, one to review the RFP, draft RFP, and one to award the bid?
Well, as has been past practice, you have to review the RFP before going out.
And I think we have the ability to waive that, but what is the interest of the committee on that?
Well, it seems it would be appropriate to review it.
I mean, you could delegate to staff or, but still.
Somebody what?
What staff have you got? but I think having a meeting, if only for that topic, would be worthwhile, if Callahan can be represented.
Well, we want to reconvene, it certainly would.
I mean, I'd like to see the process that was
committed to.
How we get to this firm, and what the level of review, and why they're the best, and all of that kind of stuff before we bless anything.
Jim?
Yes, I have a little different perspective from the standpoint of the authority, as we're all well aware, this needs to be as public a process as possible, with as much understanding as we can try to communicate to members of the public. Folks in this room probably understand what VE is. Most of the public do not have the foggiest idea whether they go to VE, peer review, or anything else. So there may be an opportunity, or I might request that either the Governance Committee or Kellam or whomever, try to get a layperson's definition of what this value engineering is going to try to accomplish.
What's the value of value engineering?
Yeah, to a certain extent, exactly right, because it's going to cost something.
Yeah, that's what you're trying to say.
It's going to cost something, that something is going to be absorbed in the rates one way or the other, the cost of the project, and I think people are very sensitive to that. And so we need to know that if we're going to be spending a certain amount of money to bring a firm on, it'd be nice if we can have the appropriate definition. And an opportunity to discuss that definition, if you would be provided, available through the authority, both of the TAC as well as for the authority meetings themselves. They tend to be pretty well either represented or attended or at least viewed, especially the authority meetings. So there's an opportunity to get the word out that once we've kind of worked our way through a comfortable definition of what it is these people are going to accomplish, that makes it worth spending the money to do it. That would certainly be something that the authority, I'm sure, would want to support, and that's where we could probably make the best contribution to the effort. But I think we really have to get a better definition out there for folks to understand.
Now, if I can ask Kellam, the Governance Committee agreement has it that Kellam will contract with a value engineering firm that we select. Is it worth asking whether, in fact, that makes the most sense, or whether it would make more sense for one of the public agencies to take on that contracting, just given the we want to make it clear that this firm is working for the public. I don't know whether that's adding up a wrinkle. I recognize it is potentially adding a wrinkle, but it may be worth the
perception is somewhat better.
Right.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I see Don in the back there. I'm sure he can comment about whether he. I guess the question would be, does that mean we have to modify the governance agreement accordingly? That's the only thing that we may have to deal with. But.
My initial reaction is yes, we would have to modify it, but we could probably do that in a very simple amendment. But the other thing is, too, which agency is going to do it? If it's the Water Authority, then we have to start gearing up to prepare an agreement to go out with the RFP, RFQ, so that we can get this done in a timely fashion.
You know, that probably really does put too many wrinkles in the process, and if we're the ones that are selecting it and Kellam is essentially hiring them, I think the perception is there that they're, even though Kellam's hiring them, it's at our direction. So that's my comment.
Let me see if they're done.
You can think of it similar. It would be better if a public agency did it in terms of transparency, because normally that's what's done when you do an EIR or something of that nature. Actually, the public agency does the contracting so that it gives the appearance, and it actually is totally independent from the developer. In this case, it would make sense, I would think, just because of the nature of the, or it might make sense, it's up to you, in trying to really be transparent to the community, because this is the number one thing that's in your agreement that you have control over.
Well, then you would look to Kellam for reimbursement for that public agency expense?
Yeah, yes.
And it's committed regardless of that.
Yeah, right.
Let me open it to the public. Any member of the public wish to address the Governance Committee on the topic of the procurement of the value engineering?
Yeah, Michael Warburton from the Public Trust Alliance. Maybe the key value engineering decision to be made in this project as to whether the technology will be a desal plant or some other type of water producing technology. And I think it's really important to think about these things because the circumstances changed while this project has been under consideration. My own organization backed a desal plant, a publicly owned and operated desal plant. But then things happened in climate change. We learned both about this erosion problem and increased storms and about availability of water. And one of those things that one of the main decisions that we made that made the desal plant valuable was the assumption that water would not be shared between agriculture and urban in our lifetimes. I think that assumption it's gone the other way. That it's a problem that we have to work out, and that there's a legal obligation to make it work out. And the value engineering involved in this is whether you go with a desal plant or you make better use of freshwater resources as we now have them. And I'm just saying that if you wait till after your 30% point to get the value engineer, it's over. And that's a public concern.
Thank you, Michael, for your comments. Would anyone else wish to address the Governance Committee on this item? I will close public comment, and I, Michael, I think that you're absolutely right. We will need to define the scope of the value engineer work, and that will presumably be an important part of the RFP that we will review. I want to check with Don on one thing. Don, do you mind? Very dangerous thing for me to be trying to play lawyer from the dais here, but Section E of the Governance Committee Agreement does allow that if agreed unanimously by all members of the Governance Committee, including CalAM, that additional matters not provided for herein may be added to Category A for decision or recommendation. So think that if we may have an ability to accomplish the contracting from a public entity under that clause if all four of us agree to that. And then we would have to work out the details, and I would want to work out details from the dais on that. But we could at least specify that that would be our desire if staff can work out those details.
Do you want a motion on that?
I would entertain a motion, sure.
Well, I would move that we look at the options for the agency to take over the hiring of the consultant and make the correct adjustments to our agreement. But we also need to know which agency.
Yeah, I don't have that level of comfort yet. Which agency?
Well, it would have to be one of the three of us, and I would think I'd be happy to offer up the Water Authority so long as Don and Jim both nod.
Yeah, I think we can do it. Go to the SBI and the station or country.
Recognizing that if that doesn't work, we would just fall back, revert to the
Solicitor and Prosecutor. Does the authority have the budget to do that upfront?
We'd get a reimbursement contract from Cal-Am. We'd seek that before entering into this. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm just looking at Dave to.
Yeah, or we could do a cost sharing on the upfront costs and then ultimately be reimbursed. Yeah, there's ways to do it.
Cost sharing from the district?
Yeah. I mean, that's what we did on two of prior occasions. But in this case, because it'll be contracted with and paid for, well, it depends on how we do it. If it's a reimbursement agreement, similar to other reimbursement agreements, and it's contracted with public agencies, we can do that. But it's really, I mean, it could come from the governance committee as the contracting agency if you wanted to. I mean, there's different ways to skin this cat.
Seems like it would be more appropriate because we are, in fact.
I don't think we have the authority to contract.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where I'm stuck. I think we have the authority to contract.
Okay.
Right. Yeah,
you could issue the RFQ or the RFP, but it couldn't do the contracting work.
Yeah, that's.
Okay. So I think you were headed in.
Okay, so I don't know if we want to specify which agency at this point or.
I think we could just.
Or say it's coordinated jointly between the district and the authority.
I just want the comfort of having publicly vetted the process that was gone through in order to select the firm. And if that's done in this public forum and our opinion is registered as to whether we concur or disagree, then that's what I thought our purpose was.
Okay, so
we still don't have the agency. Are we doing the authority or joint?
We would just say either or and let us figure it out.
Okay, either or. All right. The authority or the water management.
So the intent then is to bring back the selected consultant after the RFP process has been gone through by you guys and then have a special meeting of this body to go ahead and review how that process went, what the questions were, why these people qualified, and thus the appropriateness of their employment.
With one modification, I think if this is handled by one of the public agencies, that it would be one of the public agencies issuing the RFP.
Fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to track it.
Okay.
Actually, that was sort of not my understanding. I was thinking that we, as the body, would review the RFP.
Right.
And then the one or the other agency would actually hire that company. Okay.
Right.
So now. I don't know if that was really a motion.
I think I'm a little confused.
Okay, I will try.
Okay.
It is that we request that the Water Authority and or the Water Management District lead the procurement of a value engineer. The process would be they would pull together a draft RFP or RFQ, bring that to the Governance Committee for our consideration. Take our input on that RFP or RFQ, put it out on the street, bring back a recommended value engineer for our selection. The governance committee would be authorized to make that final selection, and then the public agency or public agencies, either Water Authority and or Water Management District, would enter into a contract with that value engineer for running the value engineering process, and would also seek and be provided reimbursement from California American Water.
Second.
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
any further discussion on this motion? Cal-Am.
Arlene's captured that.
We would need you to agree to that.
Sounds fine to me.
Yes.
Okay.
Assuming all expenses are reasonable and prudent.
Yes.
Not frivolous and capricious.
Thank you. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And I think for the record, we do need, under section E, we would need you to voice your support.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have unanimous support of the voting members and support from Rob McLean, representing Cal-Am. Okay, we'll move on to item 3, which is receive report from Cal-Am on contingency source water intake locations and develop recommendation on future actions regarding the same. And I will turn it to you, Rob.
Back to Ian, I guess.
Thank you. Arlene, if you could go next slide, please. So I'm here to present to you, again, as you know, our primary location for the slant wells was in CEMEX property for the settlement agreement. And as a contingency or backup to that was identified Prochero Road. And through the borehole program and through the hydrogeologic working group, Prochero has, as I highlighted earlier, has a favorable condition to Prochero Road. Arlene, next slide, please. So this is Prochero Road site, and what I'm showing here is Prochero Road has, let me turn this down. Prochero Road is actually closer, so a couple things came together. We had a coastal erosion study completed, and we also had all the borehole program complete. So what came out of that was the coastal erosion does not affect Prochero Road. Prochero Road parking lot itself is about 400 feet away from the shoreline. So with that, at a 900-foot well at Prochero Road, we could get pretty far underneath the ocean, even without having a coastal erosion effect. And space-wise, Prochero Road is pretty good, and geological conditions at Prochero Road are good. So that's just an example of the length of a slant well would look like at Prochero Road. Next slide, please. And then through the borehole program, this was the results of what the geology looks like at Prochero. And what we have here is here's the borehole, but we have a defined aquitard that is it's a 180-foot aquifer equivalent per the hydro folks. And what we have above that is pretty much a clean, sandy basin that we could put in a slant well to. And these depths work for a slant well just fine. So the Prochero has some, again, favorable conditions for a contingency production well location. And so I just highlighted some of those benefits. It's a disturbed parking lot. It's located outside the coastal erosion. The other benefit is there is no snowy plover habitat. Historically, that is. You never know. I've heard it can show up anywhere. So right now, though, it looks pretty good. And one of the benefits of that is it would allow year-round drilling of production well sites. So we earlier on that master schedule, you saw the gaps between test wells. They were the nesting periods for the snowy plover, so we could potentially compress all that into just a continuous activity. And then, again, we had good hydrogeologic conditions below. We had high salinity. We only took one water quality sample in that upper 130-foot zone, and it was 34,000. There's some challenges with that, however. It is farther up to shore. It's another 21,000 feet of pipe that's net. It's actually about 38,000 feet of pipe, but I netted out the pipeline that we have for CEMEX. So that's net pipe addition to the project. And right now, the cost for something like that is $12 to $16 million for 21,000 feet of pipe. So that's additional cost for the project. We do have that contingency built into the overall project budget, but it would be an adder, though. Construction complexity along that route, we have along Highway 1, we have two river crossings. We got high water table out in that area. There's just challenges as far as construction complexity. And then if we had to do a test well at the site, which I'm not sure at this point if we do, if we had to, we have a challenge of a test well. But the option that we've had and explored in the past, we've had approval through the Water Quality Control Board for it, and we do it at Sand City desal plant, and that is we percolate the water back onto the beach. And and again, as a test well, if we had to do it at Petrillo Road, a test well is seawater. So there's no brine or any disposal of harmful effects. It's just we're percolating it back into the shoreline. And that's been approved in the past. And it was actually part of our submittal for the CEMEX original test well location at the north end, was to just put it, because we're too far away from the outfall, so we're just going to percolate it back on the beach. And that was approved. So there would be a below grade percolation. So that's just some of the benefits and challenges. So that's a backup to our CEMEX location. And so what I have here is just some of what the time and potentially the cost would be if we were to pursue this line. And that is, we're estimating it would take 6 to 12 months to process a test well application at Petrillo Road, and that would be through the county, and then we'd also have state parks involved because of state parks land, and we'd have some NEPA federal process to go through. But we expect it to be a pretty expedited process, we could check with my consultants. We could have a project description filed and ready by the end of the month. And then we could file in May with the county that here's our project, and then we could process it from there. And I'm estimating, based on some historical information that we've spent in other projects, similar projects, permitting would be $300,000 to $500,000 to process this, based on a shorter timeline of 6 to 12 months. For some reason, that got extended, we'd have additional costs. That's my presentation on a contingency backup for CEMEX. Any questions? I'm glad to take them.
Questions for Ian? So again, you're looking for our recommendations regarding the additional expenditure for pursuing this contingency. This contingency location was already identified in the settlement agreement signed by our three respective agencies as a contingency location to pursue. So the question is, therefore, whether we think at this juncture it's worth that additional expense.
That's correct. If I could add a little bit to that, what we're looking at, if you look at the schedule, is we're trying to drill the test well at CEMEX in November. And if that gets held up or delayed through environmental process or other roadblocks, we're going to lose 12 months. We won't be able to get back out there until the fall of 15. And in addition, even if we get a test well in, what happens in the end if CEMEX doesn't prove to be the best location? So this is sort of a contingency plan. And if we start the process now on permitting a test well at Petrillo Road, again, we can have it done. Now, we won't be drilling by November at Petrillo, which Petrillo had to be done, but there's no snowy plover, so we could be drilling by next year in late spring, early summer, 6 to 12 months once we get through this process. So it is a pretty solid contingency plan for any issues at CEMEX to keep everything on schedule. And so, yes, I'm requesting that we consider, the Governance Committee considers additional permitting expenditures to bring that forward as a contingency.
So this would be permitted but no construction for a full... You said there's not the snowy plover concern, so we don't have the same construction window that we have for CEMEX.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's really an expenditure of money to get us into the permit mode on the off chance we might need it if things don't work out. It seems to me that, frankly, the negatives seem to outweigh the benefits. I mean, it's significantly more money per mile for the pipe alone. $300,000 to $500,000 a permit strikes me as that's a lot of money. The construction complexities of, you know, the river, the roads, kind of gets into this suspicious area of whose water is it, and then just the difficulty of all of those features seems like a problem. On the other hand, I hate to not have a fallback position, so the calendar just goes all to hell. So it seems like a significant investment to, you know, have a contingency plan for the failure of the Cynic site.
Right. Well, what I'd recommend maybe then is that we do a little more level of effort on the cost. I do believe these would be caps. One of the benefits of Potrero Road is we have all the effort that was done in the past for Cemex. So we could have a lot of economies of scale there for borrowing that we could save. But if I've looked at some of the historic things that we spent $100,000 as an example on San Clemente Dam with the county to process a CEQA review. So the county didn't have the resources, they hired a consultant and we paid them those, about $100,000. Plus on top of that, you would have our consultants that process the project description, which were gonna be 100 to 150. So
could you have that information for this upcoming special meeting?
Yep, that's what I was gonna recommend.
I'd feel better with that.
Do a little more diligence and I can give you better numbers. And I think, Mr. Dole, the other side of that is that the impacts if Cemex falls through financially are huge.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah.
So at what point, I mean, I realize you had sort of the chart, but realistically, at what point do you think you'll have fairly solid information about the Cemex well?
About whether or not it's good to go?
Right.
I would think, well, Marina. It comes out of Marina's approval process. So June, July,
next year.
August. No, this year.
This year, okay.
Yeah, we'll have assurance that, a little more assurance of when it's going to be, when it's going to go, when we're actually going to hit the ground and construct this thing.
So we wouldn't necessarily need to approve this right away. I mean, we still have some lead time.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. And if, when you do come back, if you can identify what costs you might want to incur before that key date, and where we would hopefully get to go ahead from Marina, and which costs would incur after.
After, okay.
So we might, it might make sense to spend a smaller amount of money between now and August, and then if we don't get the right the answer that we seek from Marina, then it would warrant additional expenditure. Although, on the other hand, if we do get the right answer in August, then you can just cut off the flow of funds.
Yeah.
I think
So if we had a little more background on all that, the next meeting, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. And part of that could be we could get the level of effort and cost to just prepare the project description. Right, that would get us out the gate, and then we can see from there.
Okay, thank you. Let me open it up to the public. Tom?
Before the public, if I may. Seth, I just want you to also consider contingency related to Potrero Road also spins off of the GWR decision. As you know, we don't head into testimony phase until December this year with the proposed decision in the middle of 15. If for whatever reason GWR can't move forward, can't compete economically, or whatever falls off the table, and you have a larger scale desal plant, we don't have all the information yet whether transmissivity levels produce enough water from the perch sand dune aquifer at the CMEX site. You might want Potrero Road as an alternative to produce enough source water for a larger plant. And as you look at life cycle of the wells themselves, you could potentially run out of space at the CMEX site as you begin to replace wells next generation. So it's an answer worthy of the question, finding out whether Potrero Road works, and it might be worth spending a little bit of money if there's economies of scale right now.
Tom Rowley again, representing Monterey Peninsula Taxpayer Association. Following in part what Mr. Stoltz just said, yeah, think of the old bird in the hand and, you know, one in the bush. That certainly applies here. And the comments I made earlier about the concern on trying to finalize an EIR without having test slant well data proven it works, whether you prove it at the CMEX site or at the Potrero site, or perhaps, as he mentioned here, for the sizing, again, the concern about, you know, do you have enough feed water for that desal plant? Sorry to use an old Navy term. Anyway, that's crucial. And I still think that the having the clusters in the field is something that's, to my understanding, hearing presentations that pass, has never really been done before. And Mr. Liflin mentioned, again, let's not throw the idea of open water intake completely out the window if, you know, these other alternatives for the slant well turn out to be non-capable, and that very well could be the end result. So again, the conclusion I draw is you have got to get those slant wells proven that they work before you try to finalize an EIR. Otherwise, you're dreamland. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure Caline was considering the fact that the potentially right-of-way, railroad right-of-way may be available. I'm not exactly sure how it aligns with Potrero Road, but rather than having to deal with Caltrans, which is always a problem, this has ended in the discussion I've had with the executive director of TANC some time back. So there's an opportunity there for the authority, by virtue of its membership with TANC and others, and supervisors for that matter, to possibly obtain support for providing a right-of-way that might be easier to use, less expensive, and more easily permitted. So it's something I think about a factor that we haven't already. You may already be in there, Rob. I don't think so.
Thank you. Dave.
David Liflin again. I'm concerned. Contingency. Contingent on what? What will qualify the CMAX site as being good? What will qualify the Potrero Road as being good? When does the slant well, which is being drilled for the public good, enter into the public wheel? I mean, we're going through cost after cost. You've got, what is it, $14 billion between permitting and new pipes? $14 million, not billion, sorry.
Yeah, that's inflation.
That's California. Anyways, we're talking significant costs, which we're adding to a project which we need to get done, not to mention significant time, which we're extending it. At what point do we just say, okay, put a dozen rainy wells 450 yards off the coast, put the pipes in, or put in two open water, put in two rainy, and some mixture of slant wells? I mean, there's got to be some point where we go, okay, either we're going to the CMAX site and we're doing it, or when does the contingency move? When do we get it? When do we have to make this decision? Or when can we say, it's a drought? We need the open water intakes, throw them out there. We'll do the rest of this stuff over the next couple of years just so that the state can have its little test done. Anyways, thank you.
Thank you, David, for your comments. Would anyone else wish to address the...
Public Trust Alliance, again, with the concern about, you know, whose dreamland are we talking about? There's a whole bunch of dreamlands that intersect here, and there's also law and rational consideration of alternatives. And a large part of what has happened in the consideration of this project has been the concentration on not evaluating alternatives. And, you know, we've had three presenters coming up here in the last, you know, saying, oh, well, when are you going to do, you know, so it matches up with my dreamland. I think there's still some really serious consideration to you know, what are the water resources of Monterey County and how can they best be put to use for the various communities in Monterey County. And there has been disregard of some very, very solid ideas, and then there's all this other stuff, you know, he's talking about prep school buddies getting in, and let's just make sure we don't do that. I'm asking again from the standpoint of the public. You know, the desal alternative is not a done, you know, settled on thing. There's a lot of experimental work. There's a lot of corrosiveness that you're working with. Okay, if this project could be done at all without a desal plant, you would not have the brine problem. You would not have, you know, the energy problem. And I think that those aspects, like, I'm concerned that that a value engineer cannot be engaged in this process in order to make decisions, you know, one of them being between the necessity of using that much new energy for a use which Monterey County has never used, you know, that much energy for before, is the desal process. And, okay.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up in about a minute.
Okay, I'll wrap up in far less. But I think it's really important that there are some really big things that have not been talked about in various public forum, and the county owes some answers to the population, and the cities need to discuss it with the county before, you know, you identify a project and go running off and say this is the only project that will work, because that is exactly what has been presented for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. Is you've gotten a succession of these projects. This is the only project that'll work. And there's some real thought that should happen before that place.
Thank you, Michael, for your comments. Would anyone else wish to address the governance committee regarding the contingent source water intake at Petura Road? Seeing none, I will close public comment, bring it back, and before we take action, I do want to just read one of the eight conditions that the mayor's, the water authority, put forward more than a year ago. Was the sixth one was CalAM must continue to explore and advance alternative intake strategies as a contingency if CalAM's proposed intake wells prove legally or technically infeasible. CalAM must fully develop a contingency plan or plans and implement that plan or those plans for source water that do not involve wells in the Salinas Basin. This would be arguably. This must be done concurrently along with CalAM planning and testing of the proposed slant wells. So the Water Authority has long advocated for concurrent contingency planning. I'm not arguing against getting more information on this, but I would say that I think that the Water Authority would be favorably inclined to support some expenditure of funds given the significant risk if this MX property location does not work for legal or technical reasons.
I think we can't afford not to have another plan.
That's probably an even stronger statement along the same line.
But it is an action item. Do you want a motion to continue this to the next meeting where we can have more information?
I think that's fine. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Given the hour, I am wondering whether we need to take up the landfill gas now or whether we could take that up later. I'm looking to Jim since he's been.
I can make it pretty quickly, I think.
Okay.
That's hard for me, but.
Let's see how quick you can make it. Yeah.
As you all know, that's tough. I have a report, it's dated early part of March, and Ian needs to top jump in, you will, I think. So far, William Mary has indicated that the Waste Management District and Cal Am seem to be working very closely together on this this renewable power issue. It looks like, from Mike pointed out the issue of how much power is needed to run the cell plant, substantial in the order of 4.5 to 5 megawatts, even if that's a larger plant. However, right now, the Waste Management District is looking for being able to have a customer next door to be able to utilize 4 megawatts. Right now, with the potential expansion plans they have, they may be producing as much as 7 megawatts of power. So it looks like they would be able to not only meet the requirements of the desal plant, possibly the power requirements for GWR, and still export power to other customers on the web. What's happening so far is that Engineering Solutions, I assume, was hired, I think, jointly with Cal-Am and the Waste Management District. They, in turn, used a subcontractor that did some electrical engineer, did some analysis. They've concluded to what the power requirements will be. It looks like they'll bring it up 21 kVA over fence and then into the plant at 21 kVA. However, it still looks like it's going to be more convenient to do that across the fence. There's the design requirements are being incorporated with CDM as well as on the Waste Management District side. So in the general sense, right now there's technical stuff out there, lots happening. Important thing is Cal-Am and the Waste Management District are moving forward, working properly towards the source of energy, and we think we've got it configured in such a way that we can deal with the debt equivalency question. We talked about that before, so unless there's questions on it, we'll leave it with that. That seems to be the status.
Thank you, Jim, for that update. This is a public hearing, no action. Any member of the public wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, I will close the public comment. And unless there's any items to be placed on future agendas, we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.
Well done.
Thank you.